Good morning. Thank you, Sandra, for that amazing testimony, how we can be of service to God when we see the deliverance in our own life. How can we become the instruments in the hands of God so we can be used to deliver the people who are under oppression? That would be the message for today. We have seen Judges for the last 2 weeks. And we have seen the background of how these cycles are being formed. Ordinary people God has raised to do extraordinary deliverance for Judges. Now, too often when people read Judges, they only see the God of wrath, but they quickly overlook the God who has plenty of love and grace upon Israelites. The more I read the Judges, the more I feel that there was a controlled environment where Israelites are going in the wrong direction and God would turn them slowly into the right direction. You see that because God is raising the oppression. He decides which king to come in. He decides which judge to be raised. He gives the victory to the judge. It's all controlled. And the ultimate purpose we are looking at is that Israelites who are doing idol worship and the evil in the eyes of God finally turn around and go into the right direction. Recently, 2 weeks ago, I was waiting in the car for the laundry to dry. But I was looking at this father and the little toddler, I think Chloe's age, very excited to run around. They are playing in the corridor while waiting for their takeaway. And that corridor, one side of it is nice and safe, fenced off for a toddler to run, which is good. But the other side of the corridor is open into a car park, entrance into a car park, which is very dangerous. A lot of cars moving around. Now, this father really wants this toddler to run and enjoy the outdoor. But he wants him to run towards the safer side, so he'll be okay and safe. But as you know, this toddler who's excited to see these cars, he wants to run into the danger side. If I were to be there as an Indian parent, I would have dragged him into the safe place and play there. But this father, instead of dragging him into the safe side, he started blocking on every side he wants to turn, which is on the wrong direction, until he has no other choice but to turn into the right direction and run. Now, if you look at this context, that's exactly what God is doing with Israelites. When they start doing the worshiping of idols and the pagan gods, if they are not stopped, they are lost forever. So God is bringing oppression. I know it is frustrating for the toddler when he is blocked, but that is for safeguarding and asking him to go into the safer direction. When they cry out to the God, we see the cycle slowly coming up. God is actually allowing them again and then going to the right direction, bringing peace. See, we see the love of Father to save the child. And we see the love of God to save Israelites. It is not one person's history. We are looking at a nation's history for 400 years. And the new generations come through every 40, 50 years. And God is patiently guiding them into the right direction so that they are not lost eternally. In the process, we see this cycle. Last week, you might have seen this video where there is a cycle of sin. Now, during the time of Joshua, there is discipline. And he is their leader. God's law is the law of man. You don't do the things right way, you have consequences. But Joshua died. And the elders who saw the great miracles of parting Jordan and other things, they also died. The new generations have come. And I think Fletcher was brought this theme that in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Imagine Australia with no police force, no government, no army. Any strong man can enter into your home and say, it's my home. That is the situation. almost felt like this toddler who thinks everything I know is right, trying to run into the directions. And so Israel did sin. Why would Israel do sin? Why would they worship gods of pagan? Did they see more power in those gods? Their power that they have, the more power than the God of Israel? Only two generations ago, we see Israel were under 400 years under the Pharaoh as slaves. Now they have freedom. Before, they don't have a place to call home. Now they have a promised land to call as their home. They were poor under Pharaoh. Now they have cities that they haven't constructed to take. They have roads they haven't paved, and they have houses someone else built for them. They are rich now. Then when God is blessing them so much, every battle they go, they win, why would they choose to worship other gods? When I read these statements sometimes, Israel being in the foreign land, God helping these Israelites and blessing them, I can closely relate this into my own life as an immigrant. In 2006, I think we moved into New Zealand. Initially, when we moved into New Zealand, all our prayer needs are very humble and simple, you know. Lord, all I need is a PR, permanent residency, so they are not sent out of this country. All I need is a warm place to live so I can keep my children safe. All I need is a basic finances so I can have enough food on the table. But God gives passport instead of PR. God gives own place to live instead of rented home. God gives plenty in finances. Then my prayer needs turn to prayer wants. I want to try something new. I want to try different pleasures and different cultures. That's exactly what's happening here. Israel, as they have a strict worshiping God, now they saw the worship of pagan gods in a different form totally. The worship of these pagan gods involves sexual immorality. It involves sacrificing humans, not little lambs or birds, to humans. Worshiping God needs holiness and righteousness. Here, it's totally opposite. They want to try new women, new men in the new culture. And they ended up doing things which are evil in the eyes of God. That is the stage of sin. Israel's sin, and then God, if it doesn't stop them doing that, like the father is stopping the toddler going into the park, car park, they will be lost. So he brings in oppression. It's a controlled environment, but there is oppression. There is frustration. There's physically frustration to Israel, but they are being saved so that they are not lost eternally. And then there comes a phase of repentance. Though they worship the gods of pagan, when the oppression comes in, they know whom to worship and call for help, the right God, the God of Israel. As if this God is waiting for them to turn around. As if God is waiting for them to ask for the forgiveness and turn around, the God is ready to send a deliverer. He is ready to raise a help. And he was there with them all through the time the deliverer is alive. We see this cycle happening again and again, at least for 7 times through these 450 years of period of Judges. Now, dear brothers and sisters, we are not immune of this cycle of sin. We too fall into this cycle as we progress in our spiritual life. There are times when we get attracted and fall into sin, and when the sin becomes burden. You know, there are times when these people don't call out for God for 8 years sometimes, or 18 years some other times. Why would you not wait? Why would you wait for 18 years when you are under oppression? Because sin also brings the pleasure, though there is oppression. When the pleasure slowly fades away and the burden increases, that is when we start calling out, isn't it? When we call out to God, God raises deliverance, brings deliverance. And so we have peace with God. If you carefully observe, there are only 2 stages in there that we have really some sort of control on. One, a sin stage where I can be righteous and not do the sin. And two, the repentance phase, where if you fall into sin, you immediately cry out to God. This morning I wanted to ask a question. When was the last time you cried out to God? A heart broken and tears in your eyes. When was that need come into your life? Or do we only cry out to God when there is a need and desperation? Dear brothers and sisters, we need to remember we are not immune to this. What God is doing in all this cycle for through different generations is that God is making sure every new generation who might know God in their mind but who do not know the God in their heart, He is introducing them to God and His love. There are two ways God can make you known to your heart. One, you either take the fight to the Canaanites and ask God to show His grace and mercy and see His love, or you compromise and the fight comes to your door and God will bring deliverance. Either way, God will make sure that each generation is knowing Him personally so that they are not lost. So this is the cycle that happens at least twice in this passage of chapter 3. So what do we want to look at from this passage today? I'm not looking that we will be good people of God and follow God. We are all doing that very well. But today we need more instruments in God's hand who He can use as deliverers, who He can use to bring deliverance for the people who are crying out there. We see at least three judges today, and we can see that God can use your strength to deliver people, or God can even use your weakness, if it comes to that, to deliver people. God can also use with whatever you have in that moment to bring deliverance to the people who are crying out. God uses ordinary people like you and me and use our unique abilities. Those unique abilities doesn't have to be strengths, but they are just unique to us. And bring, even though they are insignificant sometimes, He can bring extraordinary deliverance and demonstrate His faithfulness by offering what we have, our faith, our skills and resources, into God's hand. We can become instrument of His purposes no matter what circumstances we are in. So let's look at the first judge, Othniel. The Spirit of God was upon him and he judged Israel. Judges chapter 3 verse 10. Who are the famous judges that you know? Samson would come up, you know, Gideon, who won the war against hundreds and thousands of soldiers with just 300 people, or even the lady judge, Deborah. But Othniel, we never heard this. I mean, at least I did not hear him as a famous judge. But he's not just introduced here in Judges, but he was already introduced in Joshua chapter 15, verse 16 and 17. Caleb, who went with Joshua to spy on Jericho, he throws a challenge among the warriors under his leadership. What he says is that anyone who could get that city, I think the city's name is Kiriat Sefer, one of the strongholds of Canaanites in the Promised Land, if you can get that city and capture it, I would give my daughter as your wife. So Othniel, who is the nephew of Caleb, takes up the challenge. Now, Othniel doesn't really have the strength to take that large city, but he went to many battles along with Caleb. Any battle you see that Israel did is humanly impossible, but they won every battle they went into. That's because the trust and the obedience on God, and God has done fighting on their behalf. And so on that day, Othniel stands for this battle and the city falls, and Caleb gives his daughter as a wife. Now, Othniel has this strength of fearlessly fighting for God. And he also has the devotion and the faithfulness on God. You also see the influence of Caleb, the same Caleb who went and said in Joshua, I think Numbers chapter 13, verse 10, let's go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. It is these 12 spies who goes and look at Jericho, and out of 10 of them would say, just leave it. We can't take it over. It is Caleb and Joshua who says, let's go. God will deliver it to us. God says and testifies about Caleb, saying, he is a servant who fully follows me. Now we are looking at Othniel, who inherited not only the spirit of war and leadership from Caleb, and also the devotion of God. That is the resume we need for a leader. Now God chooses Othniel to deliver Israel. Let's look at the sin part of it. In verse 5, if you have your Bibles, it says, so the people of Israel lived among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And their daughter, here, listen carefully, their daughters they took to themselves for wives, and their own daughters they gave to their sons, and they served their gods. Now Israel, after entering into promised land, we are looking that they are serving the other gods. It's not happening overnight. There are phases here. They lived among them, they intermarried with them, and they served their gods. Now, one of the important things we wanted to keep as an insight here is that God, I should say devil, can introduce idols through the relationships, through the influence. Now, one of the wisest King Solomon, said in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life. I don't want to deviate too much here, but what King Solomon saying is that guard your heart and make sure when you give your heart to someone, remember that someone has an influence of moving your heart away from God or bringing your heart closer to God. The King Solomon, who couldn't take his own word, he married so many women to benefit from the political advantage. And then what happened? These wives turned his heart away from God. Now that is the situation we are seeing here with the Israelites, that they thought probably that they would bring a new soul to God by marrying an unbeliever. I don't want to go into that direction, but King Solomon couldn't do that. So better luck, and I would pray honestly if you're looking into that direction. Then God brings King Cushan-Rishathaim. He is the king of Mesopotamia. Do anyone remember what this word Mesopotamia came before? I think in Acts chapter 7, verse 2, Stephen, when he was talking about the history of Israel before he will be put to death, he says this, and Stephen said, brothers and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appears to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran. Abraham was in Mesopotamia doing idol worship. God brings Abraham out of Mesopotamia. He wants to give a birth to a nation, Israel, so that this nation goes into promised land. And today, a nation was born. Today, they occupied the promised land and they backslided. And see what and who God is bringing in? The same king who can bring him back and take you as bondage. We have testimonies here saying how God brings us from such a mess, how God delivered me from such addictions, how God really brought me out of such a sinful life. But dear brothers and sisters, it serves a warning here. If we backslide, the same master who kept you under the bondage for years could come back and take you under bondage. So it serves as a warning, and we see King Kushan-Rishathaim has taken Israel and oppressed it for 8 years. And finally, when they start crying out, then God raises Othniel. Othniel, being a war hero, called out Israelites that we would go and take over Kushan-Rishathaim. The people rallied behind him, and on that day, God delivered this king into the hands of Othniel. If you carefully look into the story, though Othniel led the army or the Israelites, the real hero seems to be God. We see God heard the Israelites crying. It is God who raised Othniel. It is also written that the Spirit of God empowered Othniel. And it's also written it is God who delivered Kushan-Rishathaim to Othniel. It is a controlled situation and waiting for the Israelites to turn around into the right direction. And immediately God brings a deliverance. So what do we learn from this story of Othniel? God used Othniel's existing strengths, his warrior spirit, and a proven faithfulness. God doesn't always call us out of comfort zones. God always doesn't call us to train and go into remote places to serve. If we get caught into that rhythm and wait for a call, we will forget that we will not be used here where we are and use the skills God has already given to us. God, yes, calls people as missionaries to long places, like we have some of the families who have gone from our own church with the training involved and lot of things goes into it. But we also need to remember God has already given us certain talents. And we were put in a place where we are put for a reason. And if we are humble enough to be available, God needs these instruments so that he can deliver more people who are crying out under bondage. And the next hero we have here is Ehud. Judges chapter 3, verse 27. When Ehud arrived, he sounded the trumpet in the country of Ephraim. Then the people of Israel went down with him from the hill country, and he was their leader. Ehud would be the last person you would expect to be a judge for Israel, because it says he is left-handedness. Most possibly, no, it is not written here, but he is disabled. But with that weakness, that he might have seen that as a weakness, or the community would have seen that as a weakness, God did not see that as a weakness, but that has become an advantage in the whole scheme of the plan. Now, we do not know too much about Ehud, but like any other king who invades and take over a country or a kingdom, they would demand tribute. Now, the tribute is like a steep tax the king required. So for 18 years, Israelites were giving tribute to this king Eglon. Again, in this story, we see Israelites sin, and then God gets angry, so he needs to stop them. So he brings Eglon, the king of Moab, to take over Israelites. By the time Ehud came onto the center stage, it was 58 years ago, Othniel fought and won Israel from King Rishathaim. 58 years ago. I don't know, we talk about revivals, right? When was the last revival we had in Australia? 50 years ago? If you consider that sort of war that Othniel did and the freedom that was acquired to Israel as a revival, it was 58 years later, 40 years of peace and 18 years of oppression from King Eglon, we are talking about Ehud God is raising. For 18 years, there's a team of members who are taking tribute to the king Eglon. Now, Ehud is one of those team members. It says he is left-handed. Now, it could be possibly everyday left-handedness, but the word that is used here to describe left-handedness is Hebrew, it is called etir. I always get nervous to pronounce these Hebrew words, especially when we have a local expert sitting in the front row. But basically, this word means that his right hand might be malformed or it was injured somehow that restricted, so he had to use the left hand. Whatever is the reason, this weakness has come to his advantage. This man had enough time, 18 years, to scheme a plan, like a dangerous assassination, James Bond level. He makes a 42-inch dagger, and he puts it on the right-hand side of his thigh. Usually, if a warrior is a right-handed, he has his sword on the right hand, left hand, but this time, his sword is on the left, right hand, right side of the thigh. That way, he could easily pass through the security detail. Anyway, this man is known to that people around and the king for 18 years. So on that 18th year again, like normal, he brought the tribute, the whole team put all the gold and whatever they earned in front of king and they left. He made sure all the team are left far away and he turned around. He comes to the king and he says he has a secret message to share. Now, as we see, we have a lot of detail in this story, how king is so fat and how Ehud is able to get a private audience with the king, saying he has a secret message. And so they went into upper room to have discussion about the secret message. Ehud takes advantage of that. He takes the dagger from his right side and thrusts it into his belly. Now he's so fat that the vent and did not come out. And then there's a dung everywhere. Now, the story is that he is dead. He carefully locks the door, goes from the back door, and reaches the hill country of Ephraim. That is where we see Judges chapter 3, verse 21, 27. When he blows or sounded the trumpet, the people came. And see what he says there. Come on, follow me. God is going to deliver. He will deliver Moabites into our hands today. Now, how he knows that he will get the deliverance? He says, come follow me. We are going to get the deliverance. We will have this king into our hands today. That's because he already saw the deliverance by himself that morning when the king is dead. That is one of the qualities of the leader, where they experience the power of God so they can share the power of God with confidence, like Paul, who says, follow me like I have followed Christ. Either way, what we see in this story, on that day, God gives King Eglon and Moabites into the hands of Israel. 10,000 able men, people who are strong and who can fight, fell dead on that day in the hands of Israel. And there is peace for not 40, 80 years. What do we see? The important thing we see from this story is that God sees us differently to the way we see ourselves. Maybe Ehud was standing in front of the mirror on this morning. He wouldn't see a warrior to himself like Othniel or Joshua. But God sees different to what we see to ourselves. God is able to use the strengths of Othniel in certain situations, but God can also use our weaknesses when we put into his hand with availability. He can make that as a strength for the purpose. So if you feel disappointed that you don't have certain talents to serve God, we don't have to worry about that. The only thing that is needed to service, the only prerequisite to serving God is a heart that is ready and willing to be used. And God can use those hearts. And we need more of those hearts in the times like this, because there are a lot of people who are crying out under the oppression. And then we see the next judge, who is Shamgar. All we have is one verse for this judge, and that is verse 31. After him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, who killed 600 of the Philistines with an ox goad, and he also served Israel. Often when God uses us, he does it at the moment's notice, asking that we only use what we have at hand. Now, Shamgar, one thing is obvious, his name is not a Hebrew name, and his father's name, Anath, is definitely not a Hebrew name, because that is the name of one of the goddesses of Canaanites. But as the generation passed and they are marrying and intermarrying, probably the ancestors of Shamgar once worshipped God. I do not know. But what he has in his hand is a farming tool, an ox goad, a stick with a sharp edge at the end which can control oxen. This poor guy is not a war hero like Othniel, or he doesn't have enough time to scheme like Ehud. All he is doing is working in his farm, and he is in the wrong place in the wrong time. He saw 600 Philistines marching towards his field. Now he has two options: either run and save his life, or stand and then commit himself, be available so there is a deliverance to Israel. And this, on that day, Shamgar stood, and then there is a deliverance to Israel. This do happens our lives too. There are only moments that come as an opportunity for us to share to something. We do not have the whole Bible with us. We won't have a whole sermon prepared, or we won't even have anything in our mind to share. But if you're available in that moment, God can use what you have to bring deliverance who is someone under oppression. So Shamgar, like Shamgar, we need to be available. In those unexpected situations where God would see if your heart is for God or for yourself. Here we see, if we have such tests come into our life, Philippians chapter 4, verse 13, Paul says that I can do all things through him who strengthens me. In those moments, notice, whatever we have in our hand and whatever we have in our hearts, we should be ready to be used by God so a message of deliverance goes to someone who is under oppression. I would conclude there, dear brothers and sisters, becoming usable for God. Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar. Some people might have strength that they call and hundreds of people will follow. But some people could have a weakness in their bodies, or some people would have a moment's notice to be usable. In all those situations, God can and will use us in many ways. Our responsibility is not to just figure out what is the best way God can use it, because it is for God to decide. What we can focus on is making ourselves available and usable with a clean hands and pure hearts. Psalms chapter 139, verse 23 and 24 says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous ways in me, and lead me into the way everlasting." So I would conclude there, dear brothers and sisters, that ourselves being available to God and usable to God, we can become the instruments in his hand to deliver people who are under oppression. There we will conclude it, and for the viewers who are online, You can also do the communion with the family for yourself, but rest of us, we will continue into open worship, and then we can also continue on to communion after that. While you're doing this open worship, remember who has come and delivered us and the price he has to pay on the cross. Jesus Christ, who gave his blood to completely purify our hands, clean our hands, and purify our hearts. Let's worship him.